Hey there, and welcome to Be Well with Steph, the podcast. This is the show for you if you believe that personal wellness can be an actively pursued goal, and you're ready to tackle building healthier daily habits with a little bit of good humor, a little bit of grace, and a little bit of coffee. I'm Steph, I'm your wellness and nutrition coach and your host, and I want to make it really clear. You're not expected to be or live perfectly here. Lord knows I don't. After battling diet culture and then learning to navigate the world of wellness culture myself, I know a few things are true. One, it doesn't have to be complicated to be effective. Two, you are capable of creating a lifestyle you love. And three, you have everything you need to start doing that today inside your own beautiful self. On this show, we'll talk about nourishing yourself, moving your body, getting a good night's sleep, caring for your mental health, being in community, and maintaining day-to-day practices that make you feel good. I'm here to help empower you to create and maintain a lifestyle of wellness that gives you the strength, energy, and confidence to go after your wildest dreams. Let me interrupt this episode for just a minute to tell you about a brand that I love. When I'm choosing a nutritional product or a supplement, there are a few things that I look for. I look for quality. Since supplements are unregulated, meaning anyone can manufacture and sell them without having their product tested and approved, it can be tricky to know if you're actually getting a high-quality product that's going to give you the support you're looking for. You should always make sure that the company you choose can prove that their products have been third-party tested to ensure that they contain what they claim and they don't contain things like toxins or heavy metals. I also look for taste. Of course, if I'm going to take something routinely, I want it to taste good. This isn't the number one factor for me, but it's certainly helpful in making a new product or supplement into a habit. We usually build faster and more consistent habits around things that we enjoy. I also look for a company that I believe in. I'm really trying to make intentional choices around the companies that I vote for with my dollars. And to me, that means companies that are ethical, both with their employees and their manufacturing or production. Companies that use sustainable sourcing for their ingredients and that work toward environmentally friendly packaging. A company also gets a huge bonus point from me if their mission statement includes serving others. It's these reasons and more that I intentionally choose to use and promote COS. All of COS's products are thoroughly third-party certified, so they can guarantee that I'm getting exactly what they claim without any risk of toxins. And they pack in a ton of nutrients from organic plant sources. COS is totally delicious, from their number one best-tasting plant-based protein award to their other powdered supplements and gummies. I'm also proud to stand alongside COS's mission to feed the hungry around the world, called Project 10 Million Meals. Every unit of COS purchase will help provide a meal to a local family in need through the food bank nearest to you in partnership with Feeding America. And right there are their bonus points. You can try COS products by heading to their website or the link in my show notes and using the code Be Well with Steph for 15% off your purchase. That's Be Well with Steph on their website for anything you want to try. Thank you also for intentionally choosing to support companies like COS. I know you're going to love their products. Okay, back to the episode. Hey there, welcome back for part two of our three-part series on healing your relationship with food. Last week, we talked about mindfulness and how we can begin to incorporate more of that into our meals and our eating so that we're more intentional about what we eat and we think about the gratitude we feel as we nourish our bodies. Today, as we move into part two, we're going to talk about ditching restrictive mindsets, stepping away from traditional diet culture, and instead embracing a mindset of food freedom, We'll divide this into three parts. I'm going to talk a little bit about what diet culture is, because there might be habits or parts of your life that are elements of diet culture, as we call it, that you don't even realize are there or realize might be holding you back from ultimate wellness. And then we'll move into talking about what food freedom actually is, what that is as a mindset, and what it is as a balanced and flexible approach to eating. Then I'll give you a few steps, maybe more than a few, that you can take toward finding that food freedom and moving away from restriction in your own life. Now, I'm going to apologize in advance because it is absolutely gorgeous out right now, and I have the windows open. So Sarah Elizabeth might yell at me when she is editing this because there are some bird noises happening in the background and some trucks and things like that. But it's like 85 degrees in Buffalo in October, and I don't know why the earth has decided to give us this, but it feels magical, and I'm not closing the window. So if you hear some birds or something in the background, you're welcome. We'll call it a sign of a beautiful fall. Okay, I know I've done this a little bit before on the podcast and in some of my social media content, but I do want to unpack again what diet culture is and what some of its key characteristics are. Because like I said, they might be a part of the way that you think on a day-to-day basis, and you're not even realizing it. One of the key components of diet culture is the promotion of weight loss as a number one goal. Diet culture places a significant emphasis on weight loss as the way we're going to feel health and the way we're going to achieve wellness, often suggesting that like losing weight is the solution to all of our health issues, regardless of what a person's individual health status is or what a genetically healthy weight for that person's body is. We're not all the same. We're not all, we don't all have the same genes. We don't all have the same goals. We don't all have the same physiological makeup, the same environmental factors, and the same body composition. So it's not normal to say that like every woman of a certain age and height should be X weight. It just doesn't make sense. And this is where BMI is one tiny tool. BMI is our body mass index, where they compare your height and weight and tell you if you're like average, normal, overweight, obese, whatever. It's one tiny tool in a vast array of tools that we can use to measure our health and well-being. So if you are looking at a new way of eating and its primary emphasis is weight loss, I would throw up a little flag and say, okay, weight loss by what means, to what ends, for what goal? Really need to look at that. Another thing that's really characteristic of diet culture is labeling foods as good or bad, putting them in separate boxes, putting them on separate lists, giving you always and never type categories. Categorizing food as good or bad based on their calorie content or their nutrition profile or their perceived benefits can really lead to moralizing food and our food choices, and which creates a sense of guilt or shame around certain foods. So if I decide in my head cookies are bad, and then I go to a birthday party and somebody offers me a cookie and I want to eat it, is my brain making the leap that like, ugh, I'm super bad if I eat this? We start to give ourselves a value that that food does not deserve. Now, we can categorize foods as more nutritious, less nutritious, helping us achieve our health goals, not helping us achieve our health goals, helping us to feel good and energized or not. We can make those choices about the way that we feel, but as soon as we start to cut and dry good and bad, it gets dangerous. I even see people do this with foods that do have high nutrient profile. You know, you think of bananas. And as soon as somebody says, well, bananas high in sugar and sugar is bad, our brain makes the leap to bananas are bad. And now if I want to enjoy a banana in my smoothie, do I have any sort of feeling of guilt or remorse or shame that I'm eating too many sugar or carbs? That's a diet culture ideal. Along with that, good or bad, are over-restricting. So super restrictive diets are symbolic of that diet culture. Now, when I talk about severe restriction, it can either be severe calorie intake restriction, like only recommending a 1,200 calorie diet, which I think we've all hopefully learned by this point is an appropriate amount of calories for like a five-year-old, not an adult. So, you know, not over-restricting the amount of food we eat, but also diet culture often emphasizes eliminating entire nutrient groups or entire food groups in order to get those fast results. And you've seen those before, the keto diet, the low carb approach, the no fat diet. Fat, protein, carbohydrates, those are our macronutrients. Our body is designed to intake all of them in large amounts. That's what fuels us. That's what helps with our tissue repair. That's what helps us to grow muscles. That's what helps our organs to function appropriately. You need carbohydrates, fat, and protein in balanced amounts. We can shift the balance of those amounts a little bit. You can feel like your body is more optimized when it eats more protein and fewer carbohydrates. You can feel like you thrive on high carb because it gives you a lot of energy. That's bioindividuality, and that's okay. But a diet is saying everyone should eat low carb because carbs are bad for you. You hear the difference there? Now, I will pause and say that sometimes people at me about being vegan in this regard because they say, well, you say not to restrict, but then you don't eat any animal product. You cut those right out. Isn't that a restrictive diet? So I want to clarify that being vegan is an ethical decision. Choosing to not eat animal product is an ethical choice, not a dietary one. What I don't do is restrict the macronutrient protein or the macronutrient fat. I include both of those in my diet in every meal that I eat. And that's how it's non-restrictive. Me choosing not to eat animal products doesn't feel restrictive to me. It actually feels very freeing. I feel a lot of gratitude and a lot of confidence in that decision. It feels good to me. It doesn't affect my health because I make sure that I'm consuming appropriate amounts of nutrients for my body, regardless of what food sources those come from. So just want to make that quick distinction. Another thing that often comes with diet culture is just in general being dissatisfied with our bodies. And I know that this can be a triggering topic to talk about when we talk about our bodies, but we've been perpetuating for decades or possibly centuries now that unrealistic beauty standards or a specific beauty standard, a specific shape, a specific size is ideal, and that we need to manipulate our body in order to get it to look a certain way. That's diet culture. They play into this when they try to sell you diets because we're promoting weight loss, we're promoting muscle building by showing people of a stereotypical beauty standard. Promoting body dissatisfaction should be a flag. When advertisements for nutrition programs have one cookie cutter body shape or size, that should be a little bit of flag because our bodies are not all the same. And we want the nutrition programs that we use to feel inclusive, to feel like they encompass all types, because that shows that they're able to be tweaked and modified to meet the needs of us as individuals. This is a focus on external appearance instead of prioritizing our internal health or internal well-being. We could lose weight a whole bunch of different ways. And maybe weight loss is something that you have as a health goal because you or your doctor do feel that you have like a body fat or weight composition that is not healthy for your body. That's okay. It's okay to have a goal to lose weight or have an ideal that your body would be healthier if it was reduced in fat or in a smaller size, but that's because it's going to be healthier, not because it is going to just necessarily be smaller. If we stop eating and we lose weight and we get smaller, that doesn't mean we got healthier. It doesn't mean we got nourished or we got fed or that we're strong. It just means that we're smaller. So there's this disconnect in our health and wellness culture between the way a person looks and what their actual health is. And that's where it's so important to use other measures other than weight and size to determine what our health is on the inside. And lastly, anything that's promoting a quick fix is a diet or is diet culture. If it tells you it happens in 7 days, in 21 days, anything that happens fast, anything that's lose weight fast, try this and I've already lost this in a week, or that says you don't have to put in effort, is honestly diet culture. Diet culture is promoting quick fix solutions that promise rapid weight loss through some sort of diet or detox or trendy approach. And these solutions rarely result in any sort of long-term health improvement. They're not sustainable because what are you doing after those 7 days or those 21 days are over? Have you created new habits? Do you have new routines? Has your environment been tweaked? Do you eat in a way that makes you feel satisfied and nourished so that you can keep doing it? Because if you don't want to do it for 7 days or 21 days, you're not going to do it for the rest of your life. It needs to become something that feels good, that brings you joy and brings you strength. So diet culture perpetuates these harmful behaviors and attitudes. And that's what leads people to a cycle of dieting or weight cycling and to a really negative self-perception. So when we say that we are moving away from or ditching diet culture, we have to decide to adopt a more holistic and balanced approach to our health, one that focuses on nourishment, on self-care, on body acceptance, rather than focusing on rigid rules or external appearance. Okay, so let's talk about food freedom. Food freedom emphasizes a balanced and flexible approach to eating, one that is free from restrictive diets, free from guilt and negative associations with food. Food freedom is about cultivating a healthy relationship with food that prioritizes being nourished, our enjoyment, our self-care, respects our individual preferences and needs, and has cultural considerations. Food freedom encourages you to make food choices based on your own internal hunger and fullness cues and your own preferences rather than external rules or diets or any societal pressures. Food freedom, if you can wrap your head around it and open your mind to it, is such an awesome way to live. Let me share with you here some key principles of food freedom. The first one is the idea of listening to your body. Food freedom involves turning in and tuning into your body's hunger and fullness cues. It is about eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're comfortable or satisfied, but also knowing that you don't have to adhere to only those rules, that if it's a family gathering that's at a weird time, but you're not super hungry, but you still want to eat and engage with your family, you can go for it. There is no rigid meal schedule and no strict portion size to dictate when or what you eat. In a food freedom culture, no food is off limits. It is your personal choice. You're not labeling foods as good or bad. We're not putting them on separate lists. Foods can be enjoyed without guilt, without shame, when you know that you are honoring what makes your body feel good. So let me give you an example. I choose not to eat or cook with a lot of oil. If I need to use oil, I'm using a little bit of some extra virgin olive oil, and I'm really trying to eat mostly whole foods, not packaged foods that contain a lot of oils, especially seed oils, because I believe that there is enough information showing that we should reduce our consumption of those, because I know that oily foods or foods heavy in oil don't make me feel good. They don't make my skin feel good. They don't make my digestion or my energy levels feel good. I've not written a hard and fast rule that says all oils are bad and I can never eat them, but I am making a conscious choice of my own, not one a different diet has given me, not one someone else says you have to make, but you can make a choice of your own that says, I'm going to reduce my consumption of that food. The same goes for me with sugar. Sugar doesn't make me feel good. When I eat it, I feel sluggish. I feel sickish to my stomach. It gives me a little bit of a headache over time if I'm really paying attention to what it does. Now, does that mean I'm never going to eat sugar? Of course not. I enjoyed some ice cream this weekend. It was delicious. That food, that sugar is not off limits to me, but I am being aware of how it makes my body feel. This is one of the principles of intuitive eating, which also can be part of your food freedom approach. They're really aligned with one another. It encourages you to trust your body, to trust your natural signals, to trust the way that your physical and emotional well-being feel when you make food choices, and then to learn to honor that, to not ignore it. I did it with dairy for a long time. I don't eat dairy at all. I don't. But that is a choice that I made, not what someone else made for me. But it was a choice I made knowing that dairy does not make my body feel good. Dairy makes me break out. Dairy makes my stomach hurt. So I can continue to fight my body on that one and eat it and take some lactate pills and hope for the best. Or I can honor and acknowledge the cues that my body is giving me, saying, this isn't working for you. It's not sitting well. We're giving you some physical cues. We're giving you some visual cues. You need to start listening and picking up on that and trusting your own intuition. So my intuition tells me foods that make my body feel like it's thriving and foods that don't. And then I have the freedom to honor those cues and honor those signals. Another part of food freedom is variety and enjoyment. You do not have to eat the chicken, rice, and asparagus dinner that the fitness coach at some random gym 10 years ago said was a balanced meal. Food freedom celebrates variety in your diet. It encourages you to explore different foods. It prioritizes the fact that you should feel satisfaction when it comes to eating, and that you can build meals that include a diverse range of flavors, diverse range of textures, different cuisines. You can experiment with different palates, with color. That's a really fun one to experiment with too. That it's okay to play a little bit, because you might find something you didn't know you enjoyed. You might also find something that does make your body feel great, or that says, hey, yeah, that was a mistake, that didn't feel good to me, I'm not going to continue it. But food freedom encourages you to get off of the prescribed diets, to step away from the portion someone else tells you should consume, and play around a little bit. Food freedom is also part of the body positivity movement, embracing and accepting the fact that all of our bodies are different, and we can recognize that our health and our self-worth are not automatically determined by the way that our body looks or the size that it is. You are so much more than the number on your genes, okay? You are so much more, and your body is capable of so much, regardless of what size it is in right now. You are allowed to want to change that size when it comes to improving the way that you feel, improving your health or your energy or your mobility, improving your heart health, improving your bone health. You're allowed to want to adjust that size in a way that feels good and supports your health. But we can also step back and acknowledge that even while I'm on that journey, I'm still capable of doing great things. I'm still doing the thing. I'm still showing up. I'm still making healthy choices. I'm still connecting with the people around me. I can do good in the world around me, regardless of what size my body is in. We touched on this a little bit, but food freedom allows you flexibility, right? It allows you to make choices based on your preferences and also your cultural background. There is definitely a discrepancy with diet culture honoring other cultures. Instead, it's pretty stereotypical Western American, standard American diet choices that show up in diet programs. And if that's not your cultural background, that's not your preference, that's not the way you like to eat, it can feel really disjointed. It can feel like, am I going to achieve the health I'm looking for or the feeling I'm looking for if my preferences or my culture don't align with this thing I'm being told is the best? I hope that makes sense. So within food freedom, we have the flexibility to embrace our individual needs, our cultural background, to nourish ourselves in a way that feels good and honors who we are as people. Food freedom is like such a way to practice self-care. It's such a way to kind of get over external pressures and get over societal standards in order to support your own happiness and your own care. So if you're thinking, I don't have time in my life for self-care, I don't really get this self-care train people are talking about, like I'm not going to the spa, that's not what it's about. Sometimes it's just giving yourself the permission to eat food that makes you feel good and that you enjoy, that is self-care. So hopefully after listening about food freedom, you are thinking that that's a no-brainer, that living with food freedom sounds much more enjoyable than diet culture, right? But when we've been exposed to this restrictive mindset or these cycling patterns and taught them through our social media, through generations before, when we've been seeing these patterns, sometimes it's hard to make a new choice. It's hard to change the way we think about something. So I want to offer you some ways that you can start to incorporate food freedom into your life today. I'm looking at my list here. This is 11 ways, okay? I'm going to give you 4 ways right now that you can start to incorporate food freedom. And then I'm going to encourage you to visit bewellwithstuff.com/blog and find this post about this post called Healing Your Relationship with Food, Part 2, Ditching Restrictive Mindsets, Embracing Food Freedom, food freedom. I want you to go to the blog and find this post for numbers 5 through 11, okay? Tip number one, increase your self-reflection time to build awareness. Begin by acknowledging your current mindset around food, any negative beliefs or firm rules that you have about food and your body, and reflect on how these beliefs and rules have impacted your relationship with food. Where did they come from? Do you agree with them or not? Do you think that these rules or beliefs about food are serving your overall health and well-being? Are they affecting your self-esteem? Do you feel like there's anything that you need to let go of? So we're going to start by reflecting on what our own conceptions about food are and what might need to change. Tip number two is to start educating yourself. Learn about food freedom. Study these tips. Think about or read about intuitive eating, about mindfulness and mindful eating. Understand these concepts and how they get incorporated into our lives. Because if we have naturally been learning diet culture for decades before this, it's going to take a little bit of time to unlearn those things, to unlearn our old habits. Habits take a long time to form, and our conceptions about the world take a long time to form. It's okay that it takes a little bit of time to change your mind on things or to change the way that you do things. But understanding these concepts of food freedom and mindful eating can really provide you with a solid foundation for change. Tip number three is to challenge your own negative thoughts. We want to notice when we're judging ourselves. Notice when we are speaking negatively about food, negatively about our bodies, negatively about our own habits or our own patterns. We need to notice these thoughts so that we can intercept them. I've done some episodes on self-talk in the past, if you scroll back through the podcast a little bit, but we want to work on these ideas of self-compassion, of self-forgiveness, of self-acceptance, knowing that just because we've done something in the past does not mean we need to continue doing it. But also that just because we're doing something differently from the people around us or from what society says doesn't mean that it's bad either. And noticing our negative thoughts and challenging them, changing the story in our head a little bit, is a great way to go about this. Tip number four goes back to what last week's episode was about, and that is mindful eating. We want to start incorporating mindfulness into our eating practices throughout all of our meals in the day, focusing on eating slowly, on tasting and savoring each bite, on paying attention to how our body responds when it's hungry, when it's full, how it feels after certain things. We want to really pay attention and be mindful of how we feel throughout our meals so that we know how we want to adjust those and respond to our body the next time. The rest of the tips for starting to incorporate food freedom, again, are at bewellwithsteph.com/blog. They're also linked in the show notes of this episode, so you can find them there. I really hope that these ideas about moving away from diet culture and into food freedom impact the way that you think about food. It is such a powerful shift to go from restrictive mindset around food to the liberating part of food freedom. Well, we've explored how diet culture's rigid rules and labels can harm our relationship with food and also harm the way that we think about ourselves. But there is another way, one that promotes intuitive, mindful eating, self-compassion, and body positivity. And that's food freedom. That's giving ourselves permission to enjoy food without guilt, to trust our bodies and our intuitions and what it tells us about the way that we feel, and to prioritize our overall well-being over our size. This path is truly what leads to a healthier, more balanced, more joyful connection with food and with ourselves. So it's time to take that step. We're going to move toward food freedom. We're going to move away from restriction. We're going to be filled with nourishment and self-love and genuine freedom. I hope that you've enjoyed part two of this Healing Your Relationship with Food series. I would love to know what you think. If you learned something new, if you're still struggling with some of these ideals coming away from diet culture, would love to hear from you. You can always reach out wherever you like to hang out. You can find me on Facebook. I don't talk about Facebook much, but I am there. You can always find me on Instagram at BeWellWithSteph. You can shoot me an email, Steph at BeWellWithSteph.com. You can go right to the website while you're there picking up the rest of these tips on the blog, and you can go to bewellwithstuff.com/podcast. There's a space there where you can submit any questions that you'd like for me to answer on the blog or that I can follow up with you personally. I hope that you've enjoyed this, and I cannot wait to share more with you next week. Take care, guys. Thank you so much for listening to Be Well with Steph, the podcast. When there are a million things that you could be doing, I appreciate your choosing to hang out here. And I am proud of you for continuing to work on your own wellness journey. I invite you to head over to bewellwithstuff.com for the details from this episode, my blog, upcoming events, and lots of other resources. If you enjoyed today's show, I'd love to hear from you. I'm Be Well With Steph everywhere you like to hang out on social media, so come on over and say hi. Until next time, my friends, be well. That's it.